Good morning, listeners, and welcome to Barnstorming PA. This is your longtime host, Taylor Lightman. This is our first episode in a long time, but we have something new for you that's a little bit out of left field. Today, we're presenting an audio piece that I produced from my recent trip to Sweden, where I went to the reunion gathering for my master's program in disaster risk management and climate change adaptation at Lund University. This was a special event. My program only has 10 graduated cohorts of a few dozen each, and so all graduates and current students met together for 2 days of camaraderie, workshops, and dancing in early June. This piece is a collage of different interviews I did with my colleagues, excerpts from a few speeches, and Aaron audio I captured of waves crashing on the beach, birds greeting the early morning sunrise, and more. I wanted to release this today because this moment in time is really tough, and I've been struggling with how to respond to it. How must I confront this moment of chaos, discord, and uncertainty? This is what I was searching for at my alma mater. The nested series of crises we face as a world makes me want to go out onto the street with a placard that reads, "Stop!" But I really don't think that would do much. But I do think that each of the people I talked to during my reunion had a pretty good answer, and I'm excited to share this with you. I think the commonality is that they've found their corner and are digging deep, holding their ground, and working to make durable changes right where they're at. They each embody what we as changemakers need to do. We need to focus on bringing as many people with us as possible, having a yes and mentality, and embracing complexity. So anyway, it's more important than ever to share this episode, and I thank you as always for listening. Without further ado, here's today's episode.
It's so amazing to see how many people came, and we could not be more happy and proud today seeing you all here. But first of all, it's good to remember how it all started. So it all goes all the way back to batch 1 and 2, being super prepared and thinking for the future and thinking that one day we will actually want to meet and we will want to be together. So thanks to Lana from batch 1 and Tobias from batch 2, that they were the ones that came up with this idea that we should start an association.
I'm Sophia, and I'm originally from Germany, currently based in Switzerland. And I work for the municipality of Winterthur, that's in the Kanton Zürich.
And what do you do?
I work at the civil engineering department, the one that is dealing with everything that is on the surface or below, so like traffic infrastructure, drainage systems, and so on. And I work as a Sponge City project leader. So Sponge City is a concept for urban climate change adaptation, where you try to implement blue-green infrastructure, blue meaning water cycles and green meaning vegetation. And you try to integrate that into the urban landscape so that you can make use of the services that an ecosystem is providing for us. So an example would be that when you have a lot of vegetation in the city, the trees evaporate water and they shade. So during heat waves, the city is being cooled down. And if you have unsealed surfaces that are permeable where water can infiltrate, then you reduce runoff water and reduce the risk of flooding. And some of the things that we have implemented so far are just like quick wins, quick solutions that we can do like with a small budget but still have a big impact. So for example, we are trying to identify areas within the public space that are not super heavily used. Like, for example, on roads, you might have spaces that are like maybe either parking lots or spaces where no traffic is actually really taking place, but they still have an asphalt surface. And we are trying to crack that up and turn it into green spaces instead, and also use it to infiltrate the run of water from the streets. Or other things that are quite widely implemented already in my municipality are green roofs, for example. That also helps a lot because the water, the rainwater that is falling onto the roof will take a lot more time to end up downstairs than when the roof is just like a normal roof. And what we are also trying to do is find more spaces where we can collect the rainwater to also preserve it and save it for drought periods, for example. So we have implemented one rainwater tank in the basement of a school building that is not used as a basement anymore. And now we are collecting the water there so that we can use it for irrigation during summer months. And there are a few other spaces in Winterthur where there's like small wells that are just ending up in the drainage system, because Winterthur actually has quite a lot of water, and sometimes it creates issues when it runs across streets, and then in winter it's freezing and spaces are getting muddy. So we're really trying to find better solutions on how to deal with that and make use of it and see water as a resource and not something that we just want to get out of our cities because it's irritating. When it comes to Sponge City, there is no one-size-fits-all solution, but you always have to look at that specific context and that specific site and really tailor the solution to that. And of course, that is a lot of work, but it will start repeating after a while. So what we're seeing right now is that the first few projects, they take a lot more effort because we are doing it for the first time. But then once we've done it a few times, it becomes the default. And that's where we ultimately want to get. What Sponge City basically is a really big paradigm shift in how you manage stormwater or rainwater. And that also requires a lot of like public relations and like educating or like informing and engaging the public of how the cityscape will change and how it will look different and what the benefits to that are. Because if you have like grass that is not being mowed anymore, or if you have unsealed surfaces where it can be a little bit wet from time to time, or if you have swales and retention ponds that are flooded and then there's water sitting there for a while, people might be confused because they think it's not working. So you really need to share how that also benefits you. And I feel like if you do that well, then most people are going to be in favor of it. Like, working at a municipality has really been a reality check for me, because I, having studied, I spent most of my time in a very green bubble, and now I'm working at an organization that is so diverse, so many different backgrounds, so many different levels of education. And what I noticed is that if you get to the core of what is important to people, we actually all want the same. Like, we want to create a good life for this city, and we might not always totally agree on how to do that, but I feel like Sponge City is integrating a lot of the aspects that people value.
That's a beautiful way to end.
Yay!
Yeah, I'm Lucas Fietz. I'm batch one. I'm working at the moment for the French Red Cross in Ukraine. Working there in Kharkiv region, like close to the front line. We're working there together with Ukraine Red Cross, as we always do as a foreign national society working in another country. We just set it up like a project there, which is multi-sectorial, like an integrated project as well. So we're focusing on mobile health units. We have several ones of those, and we are focusing on health promotion, on something which is called home-based care for elderly people, and something which is called active aging class, which is what focuses on elderly people. And then we do the usual national society development things, where we're helping the national society develop their skills. And yeah, we do, of course, as well, classic relief. So we distributing together with Ukraine Red Cross kits and shelter material. Yeah. So at the moment, like, when you look at the situation right now in Ukraine and how US aid funding gaps as well are impacting things, like, I think it's getting more complex even in Ukraine while it's well funded. That you see that a lot of projects actually closed quite a talk down. We had one MHU which we just took over, which was closed from one day to another because that this American medical NGO couldn't run it anymore because they had no funding anymore for it from one day to another. So that's definitely adding to the complexity of like, so serving people actually were in need, right? And of course, like generally, like, I mean, people losing their jobs right now. And I think it's not so much about the international ones, which is, of course, not good for them and it's not ideal. But like, it's especially as well about all the national stuff, which we forget, like, which are often like well less secured than we international experts in terms of their security net, let's say. How do I think about that things? I mean, I'm not thinking really positive about it, right? So I think the only thing how you can grab that without getting crazy while working in the sector, you have to really have to start somewhere and just working on this and focusing on the small bit what you can do, right? Especially when you look on yourself and how you work with things, you just focus on your project and focus on the things you can actually change, which you can actually influence at the moment, right? And if you're focusing on this, I think then you will see that you still have a positive impact, even if things are not ideal anywhere, right? So I think that's what I would really recommend to people, that they do that, because then you can still find like a sense in your work and find that things are still good and you can actually do something. But if you look too much on the broader picture, you lose, like, you lose yourself in the complexity, and then I think you will as well lose any target which you set for yourself, right, and doing something good.
No, I'm back
to the
today.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah, good.
So my name is Maria, and I work for an organization called Turning Tables Denmark that I also been one of the persons that helped to start up. So it's going to be our 10-year anniversary next year in April. And what we do is that we build communities around film photography and music. And at the moment, last 7 years, we're working in social housing areas around Denmark. The concept was that we used to have two shipping containers. One was music studio, one was film studio, and we were going around the country and just dropping it where the youth are living, in the parking lots next to the trash containers. And first time we dropped it off in one neighborhood in Denmark, we were not even sure if people will show up, but suddenly some youth started to come and be like, hey, you are these guys that does the music, I would like to record something. And it became quite successful throughout the years. Mainly because we always had from the beginning the approach that it's all about the youth and what they want to say, and we should not censor them. At the same time, we should be ourselves and just meet them as we are, not try to pretend to be someone, because they can really read for shit and then they really test you. And we did have some situations where they were also testing us in like going in the neighborhood where there is bigger crime rate and they would try to steal equipment. But then just by having like very open talks and explaining to them that, of course, you can steal stuff and we'll just be gone, like yet another project that came in here. But if you actually give us a chance, we can show you that we can do things together. And actually some of that equipment that was stolen, actually they brought it back the next day. And then some of these youth now, 5-6 years later, they are my colleagues and they're teaching other youth. So the whole thing about Turning Tables is that, yeah, we always open the doors to the people that are around and they were always welcome no matter what is their background. And in the beginning, we were also struggling a lot, even with funding, because like people were not really sure what youth we were working with, because we chose to remove all the marginalizing language around the youth. So we would just say we are working with the youth groups. And they were like, OK, but what specific youth groups? But I think with the years, we have like a lot of impact in the neighborhoods, that they can see some of the youth that, you know, had hard time even finding out who they are or didn't believe that they could even go to like higher education. They are now studying or they are working with us or they work with other people, but they really found a way out of those close neighborhoods where they don't believe in themselves. Because often I remember also coming in the neighborhoods and the youth would be like, yeah, but you know, I can't dream big, I'll be no one because I come from a ghetto. Because in Denmark, they have a ghetto list where they put certain neighborhoods depending on like education and income, crime rights levels. So a lot of youth that live there, they don't believe in themselves because the state and the people around don't believe, and there is a big divide. So through our project, we really try to build these bridges, also like taking the youth art into some big festivals around Denmark, art festivals and music festivals like Roskilde Festival or Copenhagen Photo Festival. We also organize our own film festival in fall in collaboration with Film Institute in Copenhagen. So we are really trying to find the ways to like bring out the good that is a neighborhood, which is a lot more than any white Danish person would assume, and just bring it to the world. So yeah, I guess in short, that's what we do. It's quite interesting because, I mean, with my work and my personality, I'm a very, very positive person. So I always believe that there is always a way out and it can all be better and we could actually all live in a better world. At the same time, I am also a very pessimist when it comes to politics or big corporations. So sometimes I'm also a bit like, okay, we are heading a little bit to shit and it's not really clear how it will turn out. But I still believe that there is only a very few people that are really bad and they wish, like they just are very egoistic and they just want their own wealth to grow and they don't really care. And I think, unfortunately, that has a really big impact on us. Like if you take political situation or yeah, pollution and climate, like we can all feel it, but I still believe that in all of us there is a lot of good, and in the end of the day I think we all, like, I think if it really would get to like very critical situations, like of course people would fight for their survival, but I think we still have, like, if you see someone else struggling you would still try to help. So I really believe that. I feel like I always have the two perspectives that, you know, I still see how negative things are, like when it comes to climate or politics or like corporate world, where is it heading? But I also feel that even among those people, there is still a lot of people with good hearts that they can be, like, you see now more and more businesses that turn their practice into something more sustainable and less wasteful, or that they look into their supply chain and make sure that, you know, if I produce clothes in Bangladesh, that maybe the factory doesn't fall on the people while they're working. So, I feel I have the two sides where it's like realist in me says like, okay, it doesn't look very promising, both climate and political situation at the moment, especially. At the same time, I feel like I'm always feeling that we all can do something. And that's why I also work for causes that you feel bring some kind of change in the society. I think when I was younger, I really believed that, you know, I can work for something really hard and it will change like life of many people and big groups. And I think older I got, I realized if you really work hard and if you really have like values and you want to work for something meaningful, you will maybe have an effect of like on 3-5 people and their lives. But I think that's more than enough because, you know, then it's not just you alone, but you already helped a few more people. So I also think it's important that we do also all those small things to really like bring up some kind of change, and also to be realistic that, you know, it is unfortunately impossible to be, let's say, a white savior going somewhere and then, you know, you fix this, because unfortunately there is also a lot of harmful things in the like surroundings around us that can't let us do that. But I think we should always remember that, you know, even if you have one day off and you would like to go and volunteer somewhere for that one day, it will still bring a change. So I think we all should kind of stick to that and yeah, remember that even small actions have big impacts in the end of the day.
I'm Mo Hamza, and I'm a professor at the Division of Risk Management and Societal Safety, where we're gathered here today to celebrate the 10th anniversary of the master's program. Right now, and for quite some time, I've been a lot more focused on human mobility, migration in particular, forced displacement to be very specific, in the context of climate change and the consequent environmental change or environmental degradation. So asking questions about causality or the lack of, we know that climate change or indeed environmental degradation as such doesn't lead to direct human mobility. Governance is really the issue here. My outlook is, and I was having this conversation, let me just give you this long-winded introduction first to tell you where I'm coming from on the outlook. There is a school of thought that subscribes to the notion of the chronicity of crisis. We are in a constant state of crisis, unfolding from one to the other, or interconnecting in very, very complex ways. And there is another one that defines crisis as an event with a beginning and an end. So the epidemiologists and their view is, well, a pandemic, that's a crisis. Yes, it is one. But it also came on top of multiple chronic crises, especially for the most vulnerable groups and the people they affected. So when you look at the demographics and the profiles of the infections, the fatalities, take migrant communities in Sweden, for example, high-density populations, multi-generational occupancy, very close proximity, perhaps in some cases not speaking the language, for example, not having access to information or material. There's a lot of stuff that actually leads to, while more affluent areas, they didn't even need distancing. That's just happens sort of by default, as well as access to information, all of that stuff. So when you say what's the outlook, are these exceptional times? Yes. But I'm old enough also to not just remember the end of the Cold War or the Cold War. I was quite an adult at that time. And it felt, and it always feels like every time is an exceptional time. I think the differences are this. I've been saying for quite some time that we have passed, we're beyond the age of the improbable. Anything is possible now in terms of what administrations can do, what politicians can get away from. Western democracy as a model is under attack, if you want, is being questioned. I think that's what is different. Outlook on climate and climate impact, I don't think that's questionable. I think science does that, and they do it very well, and that's beyond questioning now. What we're going to do with that and how we're going to respond to it, that's what's worrying. I think we've gotten to a point where we started seeing quite a bit of commitment to it, whether it's the Paris Agreement or what followed after that, only to see rolling back of this. So that's where I'm not optimistic. Rolling back decades and decades of achievements by decree and not even by a democratic process. I think that's the worrying outlook. When that becomes normalized, and then when that becomes a trend, and when that opens the door to different forms of governance where the problems are too big for one country, one entity, it requires collaboration. It requires very long-term commitment. And when that becomes a political football, and when we live in a world where me first, isolationist, I don't think that's helpful for any of the problems that we have.
Thank you.
Pleasure.
But today we're facing quite a lot of challenges, and you are much needed in this world, I would say. Disasters are failures in development planning. And I would say there is an imbalance between the development work, capacity development, disaster risk reduction, and climate change adaptation. But you, I would say you are the solution. You are the bridge between development, risk, climate change experts, project managers, and policy makers. Remember, drink many cups of tea and listen. Stay curious about what's next. Be creative, be innovative, and flexible.
Stay curious.
stand firm when things are difficult and be humble in success. Be open to learn, unlearn, and relearn. And that is something I try to do every day. Take lessons learned further and make them lessons implemented. There are always more to learn. And the more you know, the more you will search for new knowledge and skills. Knowledge, as we know, is the most powerful weapon you can use to change the world. Given the current situation, it certainly is needed for changes. It's a constant change process and mutual learning. And that's what you have here, the community and the Association of Disaster Risk Management, the Climate Change Adaptation. Returning to complexity with the non-linearity and lot of unknown variables, embrace this, embrace uncertainty, ambiguity that creates discomfort and step outside of your comfort zone. Because you, and I think I said this before, you are our change agents, ambassadors, and you are special and unique. And you are the disasters. Or you are the masters of disasters, I would say. There is management, the climate change adaptation. And from me and the staff, I would just like to say thank you for all the work you've been doing over these years. And also thank you for letting us, the teachers, to be with you on your journey. So with that, what a wonderful day, and thank you.
Thank you so much. Spears, come tell us what happens now.
Yeah, what a wonderful day indeed. Everyone, thank you for joining. Now the fun begins. First dinner, then party. And whoever survives the party tonight, tomorrow at 10:30, we are meeting at Loom Central Station. And then we'll go for a walking tour and place around. And I'll be your tour guide.
You're crying, Sonia.
Well, whenever I laugh, I cry. I don't know why.
Yeah.
It's beautiful. Oh, that's so nice. You should keep this. I mean, this is.
Should I go see them?
Yeah. Okay. So.
Collection of dad jokes.
At the doctor, the patient says, "Is it really bad?" And the doctor responds, "No, you only have to take one pill per day for the rest of your life." And say, "Oh, okay, great. I thought it was really bad." No, you can keep these 6 pills. That should be enough.
Oh, gosh.
So cynical. Can we listen again to my dad laugh?
Yeah, it's another, but I didn't like it.